This is Spectrum.
Alternative medicine, homeopathy, secret society, hypnosis, the paranormal, alternative energy, UFO abduction, the weird, the wild, and the wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. I'm Scott Jordan, here with my co-host, Tom Theophanis, and remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Hey, Tom, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Scott, how you doing?
You know, people are going to start thinking that hey, Tom, how you doing, buddy, is recorded, because I think I say it every time.
Yeah, and it sounds the same, too.
It does sound the same.
Every time.
What do we got tonight, buddy? Besides all kinds of stuff going on in the world, like Japan. Japan got hit with a earthquake, then a tsunami, then a volcano, and now multiple nuclear meltdowns. You know, that's huge, really. That's about the biggest thing happening right now. But we do have a guest, and I'm sure he'll have some thoughts on that. And who's that?
Tonight, we have James Gilliland, who's an author, a transpersonal intuitive counselor, a visionary, and a founder of Sattva Sanctuary and eSeti. His books include A Reunion with Source, Becoming Gods 2, and the soon-to-be-released Ultimate Soul Journey. He is also featured in two videos, Project Contact and The Key to Utopia. After a near-death experience, James was expanded into what he calls the interdimensional mind. This great awareness brought him to a greater understanding of the vast interdimensional multi-universe in which we live in. So welcome, James.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show.
Welcome, James. So nice to talk to you. I've been following your work for a number of years. It's great what you're doing out there at the eSeti Ranch.
Yeah, it's getting crazy out here.
It is. Maybe you could give us just a little bit of history. We'll cover the history before we get into the present day. What got you into the research areas that you're in?
Well, basically, it started even as a kid. I had I had bronchial pneumonia, was crossing over, and was kind of in a coma and out of it. So I was going in between roles at about 5 years old, having a lot of experiences. And that continued. And then I got involved in social consciousness, you know, the schooling and everything else. And, you know, all your invisible friends didn't exist anymore. And so that got, pushed aside. And then around the age of 25, I had a drowning near-death experience where I, you know, went through the tunnel that everybody talks about and ended up in this golden white light, this plane of bliss. And it was real interesting because I was still unique, but I was one with this greater light, this consciousness and energy. And it just totally changed my life and set me back on an intense spiritual journey. And then the next 30 years, I studied with lamas and yogis and every kind of process-oriented therapy you can imagine to get where I am right now. And then I started the ranch up here about 25 years ago was when we started up here, and we were just building a retreat center, a healing retreat center, and a template, you know, where people would live in harmony with each other and the land and live a very spiritual life. And it evolved into contact with these ultra dimensional beings, which come here on a regular basis.
Did you think that this would occur over there when you initially got there?
No, I was building a healing center, you know, a meditation and healing center, and focused in that arena. The area has a long history of UFO activity. I didn't even know about it, you know, even, you know, for the first 10 years I was here, I wasn't really aware of it. And then later on, I started investigating it when the ships started appearing to me. And I was doing an all-day meditation, and the ships came in, and I started talking to them telepathically. And, you know, I thought I was talking to some master teacher or something of that nature. And then when they told me they were coming from a ship, I about lost it and figured I was going nuts.
You went, okay, I'm out of here. I'm going to go for a walk.
Yeah, I did. I'm going outside, and I'm going to start planting some trees or something and get grounded again because this is getting crazy. And I've gone to
loopy land.
Yeah, but everybody else outside saw them, my two sisters, and there was other people that saw the ships hovering over the house. So they kind of validated what I was experiencing.
That's very interesting. And you have people go to the E-City Ranch. Is it pretty much year-round, or is it mainly in the summertime?
It's mainly in the summertime. We're closed right now. We're just getting ready to open, but we still have snow on the ground. So it's harsh. It's real harsh here in the winter sometimes. We have 10 feet of snow, and it's not easy.
Well, you got a tunnel from one building to the next, right?
Yeah, pretty much. This year was pretty light, though. We didn't have that problem.
Wasn't so bad?
No, maybe 2 or 3 feet of snow.
Okay, I want to get your take on, Tom, unless you have any questions about, maybe we'll cover a little bit of it. People go out there and they experience lights in the sky, and the lights in the sky, the UFOs, right over the Mount Adams there, and they respond to people. They flash, right. What you call power up.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it happens on a regular basis, and just about all the people that are in ufology have been here. You know, we've had Dolores Cannon here, Murray Rodwell, Nick Bajic, Alfred Weber with Exopolitics, and Michael Sala with the other Exopolitics. I mean, I can go on and talk about all the people that have come here. And you know, Brooks Agnew, too, has been here, and he had quite an experience. He actually got beamed by the ships, and it changed his whole life, you know, turned his life around. He'd be a good one to ask him this story because it was quite a...
Well, he also has a radio station on BBS Radio.
Yeah, he does. And they come in on a regular basis. They will stop sometimes, you know, make a right angle turn. If there's a group out there and we focus on them either with our minds or with lasers, they just totally light the whole sky up and the field. And we'll do a little, I call it dazzle duty, just to let us know they're with us and hanging out with us. But it's just, that's for what most people experience. There are some people here that have had, you know, face-to-face contacts with them. I've had that myself, but they don't do that for everybody.
Okay,
now,
that's awesome.
Have you had any of them come down like really low, where you have taken pictures like let's say similar to Billy Meyer or that type of?
We have pictures of them hovering, you know, right over the field. Some ships, unfortunately the pictures are a little washed out because of the energy fields around the ship. They aren't as crisp or clear as the Meyer photos, but. You know, we've had them land. The ones I've had face-to-face contact, I didn't have a camera at the time. So there's no way, you know, to really give the physical evidence other than other witnesses seeing them. Some of the farm and field workers actually saw them come down on the ground, and we have their testimony. But as far as the ships coming over the house and lighting up, you know, below treetop level, actually cutting the trees in half. I mean, at that level, we have just tons of footage and witnesses. And actually, we just had map makers come out here, which did a full movie on the ranch. And they got some great footage of the ships coming in and powering up and flying all around the mountain.
Yeah, that's going to be released soon, isn't it? I mean, they were actually on a show with Nate 2 weeks ago on BBS Radio.
Yeah, I was in Palm Springs at the conference there.
Oh, how was that? Tell us about that.
It was pretty interesting. I got to do a talk, my own talk, and then I interviewed little grandmother on stage, and they live streamed that. And then they did a panel with several of us up there, and we were... Daniel Pinchbeck was interviewing us, and then I did a workshop where we actually brought, you know, the different beings in for people to experience, and I explained the vibration continuum, who they are, how to engage them, cleaned up all any unseen negative energies, and then brought the higher energies in, and they took a few photos during the workshop. It's up on Facebook. It's going all over, and the whole room was wall-to-wall light spheres or orbs. It was just totally
orbs, yeah. Lots of pictures of orbs, right?
Yeah, a lot of people had major shifts transformations, healings, everything during the process. It's really amazing watching people come out of there just completely changed. You know, I've even had some real skeptics. People came in with a real negative attitude, and they just got blasted right through it.
Yeah. Well, you said that. I think you made a comment once that happens up at the ranch. You have Intel people, Boeing people, some high skeptic people, and one of two things happens. Either the skeptical people get their heads blown off with the lights flashing at them, or they just can't handle the energy and end up just leaving the ranch.
Yeah, pretty much. They either go through a shift and change. A lot of them actually quit their jobs, you know, within 2 weeks afterwards. But, yeah, we've had triple PhD Boeing engineers actually go on coast to coast and testify as to the ships that they've seen here and Lockheed engineers. And you know, the last conference we had, we did an intention experiment to bring the ships in with over 200 people involved in the experiment. And a ship came in and flew right over the conference building, which with several people filming it. And one was Brooks Agnew was there. John Riley, who's a Lockheed engineer, was filming it. Renato Longato was there. He filmed it. Quite a few people got footage of it. And William Henry was there, and he was jumping up and down and screaming, you know, when it came in. It totally blew his mind.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. You've got a gentleman there, and forgive me, I'm going to forget his name here. He's a Japanese gentleman. He spends a lot of time in a cave. And the Khan. Dude can teleport.
Yeah, Khan.
Khan, right.
Yeah.
You would think I'd remember that, Wrath of Khan. Yeah. And in his case, wouldn't it would be like the Joy of Khan. He seems like a pretty positive guy.
Yeah, he's really undergoing some major challenges because he is from Japan. And he is there right now. And unfortunately, it looks like he lost his whole family. In the tsunami, and we're actually setting up a fund, you know, to help him out and help some of the other monasteries, you know, help out the people that need help there. So
you know what, if you have any information for that, could you put it out right now?
I don't have that.
Okay.
I don't have. If they just put it up, I might be able to.
If you want to do it by the end of the show, then.
Yeah, I'll see if I can get it, because I was waiting for it to be. We're having this crazy stuff happen with our internet and all of the in-house communication and emails and everything are just. I mean, everybody's having it. You know, all of our stuff is going north and south and west and not getting to where it's supposed to be, and some major interference going on with the work here. But you know, it comes with the territory.
Yeah. Yeah, you showed, just quickly, you showed, I think you were doing a talk, and you showed images of Khan disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only way I can say it. I mean, he was fading out in the pictures, and then there was a bright light around him, and then a point of light, and then he was gone.
Yeah, that's where there's pictures of a lot of us doing that here. It's one of the, we do a form of practice, Yigong, here that we teach now, and it's quite interesting because I have a lot of the students, when I teach the self-mastery classes, people actually vanish in the class. They start phasing out and disappear and then come back, and it happens with several of the people here. We also have some other pretty phenomenal things happen. In the last teacher's training class, actually Khan was in the class, and after a lot of the pictures he took were with his cell phone with no flash or anything at night. And he got pictures of Kuan Yin appearing, these 12 or 14, I don't know how tall, they were really tall feline beings appeared to him, and he got photographs of them. And he photographed Kazekiel, a being that I worked, that I connected with during my near-death experience, and which comes as just a huge golden ball of energy with wings. It's kind of interesting, but the one I really loved is that during the self-mastery class, Mary actually appeared above the group, and he actually got a photograph of her actually appearing here at the ranch during one of the classes.
So all sorts of archetypes are popping up.
Yeah, we're very eclectic here. We're not a religion. We're not religious at all. We're just very open. And so we have people from every culture come here.
That's probably why you're getting the different archetypes.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's we're, you know, if as long as they're, you know, in service and focusing on love and joy and bliss and empowering the individual, we work with them.
Right. Same energy, many different forms.
Exactly.
That's my take on it. I mean,
yeah,
whatever. With the early research on near-death experience I did, what I found across the board was it didn't matter what image popped up. It was all the same. You know, it was just a ball of love.
Yeah, yeah.
But and that ball of love can take on many forms. And children, which is the youngest children who hadn't had any archetypes implanted into their brain yet, had, you know, they would just see a ball of light. That's all they see.
Yeah, well, Khan is Taoist, so he's not, you know, he's not into the Catholic Church. He didn't even know who it was.
Yeah.
And until I saw the picture, I go, and we felt her energy come in, and I told people in the class that Mary's coming in. Just open up, feel the energy, allow her to work through you, experience whatever you need to experience. And, you know, the whole class was just sighing and feeling this incredible energy, and a lot of healing energy was going on. And then, you know, he was at the back of the class, and I see him pull his camera out and go click, you know, and then he just goes, oh, he gets all excited. And then I said, okay, we got to see this. And sure
enough, does he speak English?
Not very much. He speaks some English, but not a lot, unfortunately.
Okay. But he's over in Japan right now?
Yeah, he's in Japan right now, and they're setting up a website for him. It's almost set up, and a place where people can donate. And what I can do is I'll send you that link. I was hoping that I got it in my email, but I don't have it. It didn't. It was supposed to be sent to me just tonight. They just set it up.
Right.
And I'm looking in my email, and it's not here, which is pretty much par for the course. Almost everything.
About normal, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty crazy what's going on here.
I mean, I know a lot of people that want to help, but they're sort of wary about big international organizations. You funnel the money in there to go help people, and it ends up in, you know, people's pockets instead of where.
Yeah, usually goes into one of our ex-presidents' pockets.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the big international donation, just stay away from them. But if you're setting up something that's local, that, you know, to help people out in Japan, I mean, that's awesome. That's great. Then, you know, directly the funds go directly to that person.
Yeah, this is going directly to, he's going to be working with other monks and other temples and things like that to, you know, to help out, to get this out. And part of the money is actually going to go to helping him search, you know, for his family, you know, help him to find if his family is still alive or not.
Okay, maybe we should get into that now. What are your thoughts on Japan? Japan got hit with, first it got hit with an earthquake, then a tsunami, then a volcano blew, and now there's multiple nuclear meltdowns.
Yeah.
Do you have some thoughts on that? You'd like to just take your time.
Yeah, I think what happens is a lot of these events have more than one thing happening with them, and it's not just one event. And one thing is they definitely had a HARP signature, and the cloud formations were happening over Japan before that went off. So, and some
by
of the
that
Russians,
you mean the lights, right?
And the strange cloud formations where they take these really weird patterns that are pretty obvious that there's some HARP activity going on. So that was at play. And actually, some of the Russian scientists said, you know, we clearly detected the signals, you know, way before the quake that were at play. And for those who know how HARP works, it just keeps building energy in that one spot until it busts loose. So they, what happened too is also some coronal mass ejections and solar flares also hit at the same time along with that. And then, you know, the ninth wave came through on March 9th, which is that huge wave of energy. They call it unity consciousness, the Mayans talk about. So very intense energies were all at play during that time. And
the moon?
Yeah,
and the moon is close. There's lunar modulation, solar effects. Yeah. I believe Piers Corbin talks about that.
Exactly. And we're coming up just a few days now. We have another huge full moon that it's going to be closest to the Earth. And so between now and then, we are going to have some more shaking and rocking and rolling. So what I see happen there was multiple things. And I know that Japan has really been thumbing their nose at the New World Order. And they were demanding that they turn over control of their monetary system to them, or they were going to send a quake. And they actually did hit one area before that and that had a nuclear reactor. And they said, they told them exactly when and where it was going to happen. And they did do it. So they did turn over the control temporarily. I think that's they're trying to get it back right now. There's a lot of nonsense going there. And they also brought out 911 in their parliament there. They talked about that openly and said this was not what it's being told. You know, it's an inside job and everything else. And they're bringing out all these water cars and magnetic motors. And so,
yes, the hydrogen cars, yeah.
Yeah, so on every level, they're snubbing their nose at the New World Order boys, which makes it pretty obvious that they... And my gut feeling is that I think there was some major intervention there. It could have been a lot worse than it did happen, because I think their plan was just to totally wipe Japan off the map. And there's enough intervention that didn't allow that to happen. Mm. There's still intervention going on right now, because there are a lot of ships being sighted there. I'm getting a lot of reports of a lot of UFO activity there. And that's one of the things that we've been praying for we've been doing live stream meditations to send energy and healing to Japan. And one of the things we've been asking for is to really focus on help from these ultra dimensional beings that are very spiritually and technologically advanced. And
now, where are you doing the live streams from? Do you have a Ustream or a JT?
Yeah, we have Ustream. Yeah, we have Ustream here, and
address? Sorry, I keep asking you these detailed questions. You like, I don't know.
Yeah,
well, I just click a button.
Yeah, if you go to website and go to the website, it's on there at eseti.org. Or if you just go to, wait a second, I just got Con's site. Okay, so I just happened to get Con's site here. I guess. They're listening to me over here. Let me give that one that will help out the people there in Japan.
Very important.
But it's HTTP, you know, /// and it's funds.gofundme.com and then, you know, /, and it's 32 OIG.
Okay. We'll put that up on go for it again. And
what's your email? I'll just shoot it to you really quick.
Oh, yeah, give it to me. info@spectrumradionetwork.com. info@spectrumradionetwork.com. And if anybody wants to call in and talk to James, our live numbers are on the Listen Live page at www.spectrumradionetwork.com.
Okay, so it's info@spectrum. What was it?
info@spectrumradionetwork.com. SpectrumRadioNetwork.com.
All righty.
Sorry, I had to do that.
It's sent off, so you'll have that link, and that we'll have it. I'll put it up on the show on our side on BBS, you know, As You Wish site, and we'll put it up. We'll send it out over our list. Also, too, if people want to sign up for our newsletter, it's free, and it's you know, the email newsletter, and it goes out and it lets people know about all these things that we're being involved in and helping out Japan and the live broadcasts and everything else. And it's also at eseti.org.
Okay. Okay. That's great. So just to carry on with what's going on in Japan, you think that there's a larger influence going on. Now, I do know that Japan is very open when it comes to free energy research.
Exactly.
They're putting a lot of time and effort into that sort of thing. And historically, and this is going back 20 years, Japan has always been very interested in the UFO phenomena.
Exactly. And you know, it's stepped up like crazy there. I'm getting just overwhelmed with reports. And I think it's very important that maybe before we all go to bed tonight, that maybe we say a little prayer that you know, the higher beings, the masters, whoever you're connected to, ask for a little help and ask these ultra-dimensional beings if they will step in and kind of cool down some of these reactors or shift them. They did it in Chernobyl. There was a lot of reports, even by the scientists there, of a ship hovering right over Chernobyl, sending a, looked like a purple-colored beam right down into the reactor, and then all of their readings dropped significantly.
Yeah, no doubt. Purple, what a great color that is.
Yeah.
I mean, energetically, purple is a pretty big deal.
Major transforming energy.
Yep, big time. Tom, do you have any questions about...
I want to go back and ask about some of these beings as to what, you know, what they look like, where they came from, or where they're coming from.
All right. Real quick, the Ustream name is just ECETI, ECETI, if you go to Ustream.
Oh, okay, that's handy.
Yeah, it's ECETI.
When are you guys going to be broadcasting again?
We're going to do another one Thursday at 7, I believe. We're going to do another... Okay.
And that's 7 p.m. Pacific?
Pacific Standard Time, exactly.
Okay, so 10 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah, and you know, some of these beings that we have been working with, most of the ones that the first contacts that I had experienced were Nordic. They were the Palladians, and extremely blissful, very giddy energy, very loving energy. And then it shifted to, there's an Orion Council of Light that J.J. Hertek wrote about, and I was initiated by them, and they're also look much like us, very genetically refined, you know, very beautiful beings inside and out. Only when I looked at the female, her name was Malia, she looked like all races combined in one. Like a very advanced race of beings that might have come out of multiple races all eventually combining, which is pretty much what would happen over, you know, thousands or millions of years. But and then I've had contacts with these Andromedans that are very tall. They're 8 to 10 feet tall, you know, very big beings. Those were the main contacts that were happening. And then later on, all these other beings started coming in, and just as my own educational process. And the ones that have been coming in a lot lately are these feline beings, fifth and sixth dimensional feline beings from Sirius.
Okay.
Now, that's been happening a lot, you were saying.
Yeah, that's happening. Actually, Khan got a photograph of the six-dimensional Syrians coming in, which are extremely tall. They're like something out of Avatar. And what's interesting is we've had them photographs or drawings of them on our website for I don't know how many years now. I've lost track. And when I saw the movie Avatar come out, I went, all right, this guy's getting information from somewhere. You know, it's pretty amazing.
The Palladians, is there any similarity to the Maya information?
Well, they seem to be different, and they seem to be very accurate in the things that they say, and extremely loving. You know, they seem to be a whole different enchilada there, because I don't know if anybody's ever dealt with a Maya group, but they are tough. I mean, they believe that Billy is the only true prophet of God, and that
he used to be Jesus Christ at one time.
They venomously attack all other researchers, even crop circle researchers. You know, tell them that they're all hoaxed and things like that. So that's been going on for a long time.
Well, Michael Horn's sort of a
It's
like, you know, I picture him in full battle gear with a, you know, two-handed sword, you know, pulling down anybody that stands in front of them.
With the exception of whatever their belief systems might be, is there any like, when I say similarity, do any of these beings have any connection to whatever Myers?
One's called Plagiarian,
and
it's called Palladian. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah. Well, the thing is about Palladians are even mentioned in the Bible. you know, they talk about the sweet energies of the Pleiades. If you go to any of the ancient ancestors' information from the Native Americans, they all point to the Pleiades, and they actually say the name Pleiades. If you go to the Philippines, and they point at the Pleiades, the Hawaiian kahunas, you know, point at the Pleiades and have the name. So it's really interesting. That name has been around forever, but the Meyer Group is saying, well, they aren't Pleiadians, they're Plejarans, and we have an exclusive on them. And we just said they're Pleiadians to set everybody else up, which was ridiculous. But it's a very, very ancient, I mean, even the Egyptians, everybody they're all aligned with Pleiades. It's in the temples, you know, you can see these different star nations or star groups that are aligned with our most ancient cultures and very involved in our cultures as well.
Yeah, there's a couple of star systems that are the alignments show up a lot. Pleiades, yeah. Orion.
Sirius.
Sirius, the dog star, I was going to say.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, I mean, that's all over the world. Again.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no exclusive on spirit or contact or UFOs. I hate to burst people's bubbles, but I mean, there's people being contacted all over the planet right now. And a lot of people, when they're meditating and praying, they're actually working with, you know, these Pleiadians or higher dimensional beings. And I mean, even Billy Graham calls them God's other angels. And it was funny, he said they don't need to be baptized because they haven't created the original sin or whatever because they weren't on this planet.
Which is bad for people who weren't born on this planet. You know, all the billions and billions of other planets who, you know, can't be saved because they weren't born here.
Yeah.
That's a little rough. Yeah.
Kind of said they didn't need to be because they didn't bite the apple, you know?
Oh, okay. So no apples on their planets.
Yeah, I guess not.
I'm having a little fun with it. Just sometimes you gotta laugh. I mean, it's so.
Are these beings on a physical plane, like ours?
Some of them are. Most of them are higher dimensional beings, but they can drop in. They have both the spiritual ability and the technology to drop in to this reality if they so choose.
I think that applies to the lights that are showing up on Mount Adams as well. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah. You know, we just flew around that mountain and photographed it very close. And we had one of the biggest melt-offs we've ever had where a lot of the glaciers were gone. And we found these two just massive caves going into the mountain. And it looks like a giant Buddha carved out in front of it. Yeah, and that's the area where we see these ships coming in and out on a regular basis. And actually, Kenneth Arnold in 47, you know, who coined the word flying saucers, he actually lost sight of the ships when they landed on the western slopes of Mount Adams, which is right where this is. So I mean, there's a long, long history with fire tower spotters.
So you're going to be setting up a hike to that area.
Exactly. Yeah, probably will be an expedition.
How's the terrain up there?
It's rough. It's really, really
rough. Is it
hard
to climb?
Well, the problem is a lot of it is sheer ice that you'll be climbing on. You know, you'll be climbing up sheer ice on some of it to get to that cave, unless you catch it just right where it's all completely melted down. And it's not on the regular climb that most people do. It's in a different area. So it's going to be, it'll be tough to do it,
Does it melt in the summertime or no?
It does, yeah. Most of it does. I mean, the mountain still has snow on it all throughout the whole year, but the majority of the snow on the south side melts with, you know, some left. And then the other sides are just packed, you know, especially the north side is just full of snow, I think, year-round.
Oh, okay.
How far are you guys from it?
We're about 13 miles.
That's not very far at all.
Yeah, it looks like it's in our front yard. I mean, we look right at it in our front yard, and that's the field. We all go out in the field and pull up lawn chairs at night and just watch the ships either coming, you know, in and out of the mountain or flying overhead. Like, they fly right over the house and play with us.
And you have satellite information on a laptop there where you can I don't remember the name of the program, but you have a program that tracks all of the known satellites flying overhead.
Yeah, there's JTracker, and then there's Heavens Above, both, which we use to make sure we're not looking at a satellite. But, you know, satellites don't stop and then make right-angle turns and, you know, do big C-shaped turns and fly below the trees and respond, you know, to the people on the ground. I keep people saying, oh, you're seeing meteors and satellites. And we had a guy from OMSI Planetarium, which we showed the ships landing on the mountain and morphing from one to three and back to one again. And he said it was the space shuttle. He said, we're seeing nothing but the space shuttle. And I asked the guy with ABC News was interviewing him. And I said, did you ask him what the space shuttle was doing on the mountain? You know? And he goes, no, I didn't ask him that. And I go, oh, my God. You know, it's like
mainstream media, right?
Yeah, we have that footage. And it's it's just unbelievable the lack of base common sense that's coming from these debunkers. I mean, what they're coming up with now, it's so ridiculous. It's actually a comedy.
Yeah. Have you had any of the videos analyzed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've had a lot of it. I actually had some of the footage from Village Labs with Jim Dilatosa analyze one of the ships, one of the big Pleiadian ships. And it's a beautiful ship when it's coming in. And it's pink in the middle and turquoise on the top and bottom. And on the sides, it's blue, just beautiful colors spectrum on it. And when it came in, it was putting out this deep, deep pulse. And we actually had that analyzed, and what they said was it sounded like some kind of a binary code, and it's so deep you can't even play it on your laptop. You have to have some pretty big speakers to really play it, just because it is such a deep pulse, you know, coming from the ship.
Wow, that's interesting. And
one other thing I wanted to talk about, which was hilarious, is that you know, Above Top Secret came out here. And we have actually on film with Johnny Anonymous actually receiving a healing from the Pleiadians. And he got the sound of their ships coming in. And he went on record and said, hey, my whole back and my leg is feeling great. I don't know what happened here, you know. And he got the sound of the ships and everything else coming in. And then when he went home, he totally deleted all of that, as well as some really good footage and everything else. And came to the conclusion that they were satellites. And we have all Johnny Anonymous with Above Top Secret. And they were out here. Unfortunately, they were out here. And they were, you know, pounding down the Jack Daniels quite a bit out there, the rest of the group. And they saw ships come in and threw the binoculars down on the ground and goes, oh, my God, it's a ship, and ran off and just kept drinking, you know. So all that stuff happened, but you didn't hear any of that. And it was when Robbie Williams was out here. And if you hear Robbie Williams' story about what he experienced out here, it's a totally different story. And we had his sound engineers and everybody else that analyzed the sound of the ships, and they said they've never heard anything like it. They got the sound from the ships, and they said that it was like all these different ringing tones feeding back on themselves. And in a loop, and he said he's never heard anything like it, and that's his business. You know, he's there to duplicate and filter out and check out any kind of sound, and, you know, he's a master at it.
Well, so, Robbie Williams is a recording artist.
Yeah, he's like the Beatles over there in pop star, you know, over in the UK. But, you know, and he came back a second time because he had such an amazing experience here. He came back again and actually wrote quite a few songs here. And so, you know, if nothing happened here, why would they come back, for one thing? And the other thing is that why did they sanitize and censor all of this footage? And we have the footage, you know, we may put it up there, but it's very sad. It's very sad what they did with the experience here. I've never seen such nonsense and such mis or disinformation about what really happened here.
Well, you run into that a lot. You run into that. This is almost par for the course, with you. I mean, you run into that with the UFO crowd. Of course, you're talking to two people who are part of the UFO crowd, but we, Tom was the director of MUFON Ontario, and he broke away in 1993 just because, well, you know, it was crazy.
A little too infiltrated.
pretty much. But, you know, so you've had run-ins with the UFO field. You don't even really go out and talk on lectures in the UFO field that much anymore, do you?
No, I pretty much, if you look at like the major, you know, UFO groups out there, a lot of them, and just go and look at who's on their boards, you'll see there's like Council on Foreign Relations people holding cards, you know, and military people, you know, ex-military intelligence, things like that. Their boards are full of them. And they keep a very dark picture going out there, and you know they're trying to push that, you know, Wernher von Braun program, you know, where they, you know, they went through all the other countries as a threat, and now they want to make UFOs a threat as the last hurrah to keep the war industry going. So,
right. You know, Tom knows a lot about that. Tom, we just recently talked to Aileen Douglas. Mm-hmm. Was a state director for MUFON, and now there's a lot of stuff going on in MUFON that's blowing up in their face. Tom, could you go over that a little bit? Just give us a quick run now.
Well, I mean, you know, one of the major things that was found recently, you know, in the last couple of months is when Robert Bigelow was involved in purchasing pretty much everything that MUFON had and will have in the future. And by doing so, you know, basically this owns them mm-hmm. and controls everything that goes in and out. And it's a crazy type situation down there. And
it's really crazy. Yeah,
they hadn't told the rest of
the membership.
The membership, which is ridiculous. You know, yeah, not making those kind of choices and. You know, the board is got, you know, the power to pretty much do anything. Well, the members have no clue.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Yeah,
it's amazing what's happened. They were slowly being changed. They got to the point where you could only all of the top tier reports that were coming in. There was a special team that was set up called the Star Team, and they would be set out to investigate the stuff. And even the people who were the state directors couldn't send their groups out. No. Only that team could go out and check out the big cases.
Yeah.
It had to sign non-disclosure agreements. I mean, this is a volunteer organization we're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah.
You have to sign a non-disclosure agreement?
Yeah.
You know? Can't even tell your wife about the case you're investigating? Come on. That sounds like a military operation.
Pretty much is, you know, unfortunately, that's how it got started. But, you know, we've had some wonderful people come up here with MUFON, you know, the Oregon chapter, some of the ones down in, especially down in Eugene, Oregon, in that area, came here and they saw what was going on here and they just loved it. And we've had a lot of people come here. But what I've seen is that with the MUFON people that came up here, it was a real mixed bag. Either they came up with such a bad attitude and a control program going on that they actually ruined it. You know, they ruined the experience for everybody else. And also, too, is that we would have some that came up that were serious investigators, and they just wanted to get to the truth of what was going on, and wonderful people. And they had an incredible experience while they were here. You know, I've had women come up with a hat, you know, the little MUFON hat, mm-hmm. and go, I'm a field investigator, and everything you're seeing here are satellites, and you're not, you know, doing your work and all this other stuff. And we have the thing right in front, you know, the computer's right in front of them going, look, here's J-Tracker. Right now it says Trout Lake is clear. There's nothing here overhead. What was that big massive object that just flew over and made a right angle turn and powered up and lit up? And she goes, that was a satellite, you know, that. And I go, oh my God, you know, where do they get this? I go, this is ridiculous. And then they went storming off, you know, so I'm sure that report went out, you know, as a real positive one. But, you know, you have that kind of thing that happens here. And what I see is, is, you know, you kind of get here what you bring to the party. If you bring a bad attitude here, a lot of times you go home with a really bad attitude. But if you just have an open mind, you know, and you come for the experience, you'll see things that there's no way you can explain.
Yeah, well, I mean, even when we interviewed the BBS radio guys, Doug and Don, Doug and Don Newsom, they said, you know, they was it both of them that were up at the C-SETI or
E-SETI or just Don?
Just Don.
I don't think Doug came up.
Don said he had a great experience.
Yeah, there was 300 people here that weekend, and it was crazy. And we had four ships, huge ships, come in and power up right over the group, you know, with hundreds of witnesses outside. So it was just a crazy weekend when he was here, and you know, there were so many people. But whenever we have these big conferences, we have a Science, Spirit, and World Transformation Conference. Whenever we have these, the ships come in every time. And what's funny, Renato Longato, do you know him? Do you know who he is?
I've heard of him, yes.
Yeah, he's kind of a Latin American UFO investigator and journalist or whatever. And he's always here when the ships come in, and I always hand him a camera and he gets them on film. And it's kind of a joke because you always hear him in the background going, I got it, like this, you know. It's, and everybody's just laughing and having a good time. I mean, there's no fear here. Everybody just loves the experience.
Well, that's the point. It's exactly what you said. It's what you bring to the party. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're bringing that sort of positive outlook, or even an open, inquisitive outlook.
Exactly.
Then you can benefit from that.
Hey, James, just getting off the topic a little bit, how's the mushroom picking up down there?
I don't think it's started yet, but there are a lot of pickers up here, and they seem to do pretty well. I think most of it's under snow still.
Yeah, right now it would be, yeah. But yeah. I hear the morels are really, really doing well up there in the spring.
Oh, yeah, they pull a lot of morels out here, and they have buyers posted everywhere here, and it's a pretty big operation in this area.
Tom's a mycologist, so of course he's going to talk. I have no idea what he's talking about, but he just, well, mushrooms, okay.
I have a hard time telling which one is which, so I'm afraid to eat them. So
Tom would know. Tom knows. He takes people
out. I would
like
to come down there and do some of that as well.
Yeah, there you go. We
Tom
have all over the ranch.
Out in the woods and teaches them how to eat, live in the woods and eat on, you know, from what the woods provide.
Oh, good. Yeah. We could use a little experience there.
Definitely. Tom, you should go down there. Well, I'm going to drag Tom down there anyway. We're coming up with a plan to get them down there this summer.
Oh, great. Yeah, it's a life-changing experience because, you know, people that come up here, I always tell people, don't even take my word for it. Come up and see for yourself. And the people that do are just blown away. I mean, when this becomes real for you, then you go, wait a second, what's real and what's not real? Everything else I was told might not be real either. And they just, it kind of cracks the egg, and then they just take off from there.
So what do people do? I mean, you have, like you said, 300 people show up. They bring trailers and camping gear?
Most of them camp in the field. You know, they bring, and then there's a lot of hotels not too far away, you know, within 20 minutes in Hood River. So a lot of people get hotels in Hood River, or they just come and camp. And that's the best way to do things. If you camp, you know, you're out in the field and things, you know, the field just fills up with light spheres and orbs, and there's lights zipping around the field. It's pretty crazy.
You don't mind people showing up with a tent and a sleeping bag and
saying,
I'm just going to go set up in your field, James.
No.
How big is your property then?
It's a little over 70 acres.
70 acres?
Yeah, it's pretty big. You know,
70, so yeah. That's huge. Do you have, like, organic gardening there and all kinds of stuff?
Yeah, we have huge gardens here. We grow a lot of our own food, and we have probably about, I would say, you know, a good 7 or 8 acres of echinacea that's, like, 10 years old. It's all organic. You know, we just have all kinds of things. We have yaks. We're raising yaks and chickens and, you know. all the above. You can go down to the end of the road and catch fish out of the river, and go a little further down and get salmon. You can get trout and salmon. So it's a lot going on here.
So you're pretty much set up there. Have you got a natural well or?
Well, the whole town here is on Glacier Springs, which is a huge spring that the town is on. It's all gravity fed. And then I drilled a well here on the property and pretty much hit the mother load. So it's a huge well that provides everything that we need.
Now, are you worried about radiation coming from Japan over in the atmosphere over to where you guys are at? Because I believe you're on the West Coast.
Yeah, yeah. I don't worry about much of anything, basically, you know, so I've already died a couple times. It's not that big a deal, but, we are taking preventative things. You know, we've been doing this for a while anyway, because, you know, I don't know if you're aware of the chemtrails and that whole process going, but one of the things that's coming down out of the sky is strontium, and it's radioactive. So we've been getting the heavy metals out of our system, you know, the aluminum, the barium and strontium and all the other nonsense. You know, what on earth are they spraying is a movie that everybody should watch to see what's really going on. And that was another thing that Above Top Secret totally dissed and said it's all nonsense and crap is the chemtrails. And I go, who are these guys? I mean, what is wrong with them? They're supposed to be, you know, looking out for us. And obviously, you know, they have some major corporate sponsors that...
A lot of the big forums are, you know, pretty much infiltrated, taken over.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it makes you sad when somebody comes to your place, you know, and you house them, feed them, take them out. You know, they act like you're your best bud and everything. And then they go home and just totally rip everything apart. And to me, it's not so much... I don't feel like, you know, they screwed me or my character. They screwed themselves when they do it. But it is sad to see humanity result to that kind of nonsense, you know, when they could be doing such, you know, a service to humanity.
Yeah, and there's no real point. There's no real point biting back. You just kind of go, oh, okay, you had the opportunity to have this experience and share it. You didn't. You did a smear job. Next, you know.
Well, you know, at the same time they were here too, Paranormal State was here. And they did an incredible coverage of the whole thing. But they did, you know, they did their kind of Hollywood version. They had to have boy meets girl and make a play out of it, you know. But other than that, they did show the ships coming in. They did bring their psychic Coffee. What's his first name? Tim Coffee? I'm not sure. But they brought him on, and both of us, on the air, he said, well, where do you think the ships are going to come in? And I said, well, they're going to come in, you know, from the east. And I told him 10 o'clock, a little bit towards the mountain, towards the east. And then Chip Coffee, that's his name. And he said the same thing, you know, I came at the table after he did his interview, and I told him the same thing. And they all looked at each other going, whoa, you know, I kind of freaked them out. And the ships did come in right at 10 o'clock, and they came in exactly where we said they would come in, and they put on quite a show, and they got it all on film. So that's pretty clear that there is pre-knowledge of the ships coming in and when they're going to come in and cooperation on their end.
Mm. Yeah, so a lot of stuff. I mean, it's a hot spot. I mean, there's lots of hot spots around, but you're living on a hot spot. And you were sort of drawn to that area, weren't you?
Exactly. Yeah, with visions. And I didn't know who was doing the visions. I found out later, but it was them that were showing me the visions on where to go and inspiring me to do it. And the other thing, too, is that we have a different approach here. We rose to the occasion and really developed ourselves spiritually. And we invite them to come in versus chasing them around with a camera. And so we're extremely successful at what we're doing, much to the chagrin of most of the UFO community, because what we talk about, we have the evidence to back it up. I mean, I have boxes and boxes of footage of these ships doing everything imaginable and jets chasing them, and it's kind of hilarious. We actually recently, with the map makers, were here.
Right.
We had a big UFO come right over the house with a jet screaming and vectoring in on it, and the jet disappeared. it's just, we don't know where it went. All of a sudden, it just vanished.
Wow.
Do you get a lot of daytime stuff or mostly nighttime?
Mostly, we get daytime stuff, but mostly nighttime. They're very easy to see because the fields around them, you know, when they're lit up. We get a lot of daytime footage, too, of the ships, mainly photographs. They just show up in the photographs. But the what's interesting is the day after that event happened, we had three black F-15s come right over the house twice. Very low. I could see the guy's face in the cockpit. That's how low they were. And and we got that on
film. That's sort of legal, isn't it?
I think it is pretty illegal. But we actually filmed them doing it. You know, we unfortunately filmed them on the second pass, which was further away. But the first pass was right over us. You know, it was undeniable, and we got the whole thing on film. But we have black helicopters on a regular basis here, and footage of them chasing the ships and photographs, and it's a no contest, really. The ships just zip back and forth, and you know, they'll turn and come in on the ship, and all of a sudden it just appears behind them. You know, and it moves so fast that there's really nothing they can do about it. So it's these beings are so advanced. There's nothing we can do about
it. Those new satellites can do that, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So just the new ones, not the old. The old ones just go around, right? But stationary object. But the new ones, they can do right angle turns, disappear and reappear at will.
Oh yeah. And then become three and then back into one again. I think that's an amazing satellite trick.
That's a really good one.
Become a giant triangle.
When you have 300 people at the ranch there, how do you control such a huge group?
You know what? There really isn't any need for it. It's amazing because the people that come here are so graceful and you know, it's just amazing. Everybody cooperates, and we do a little indoctrination thing the first day, and we said, hey, look, there's 300 of you here. There's a lot of energy here. People's stuff is going to come up. You need to own it, you know, when it does come up, and everybody work together. And if you see somebody that needs help, help them out. And I have a great staff here. I have an awesome staff. So, you know, small staff, but it's just mutual cooperation that everybody just gets along and everything flows and we don't have any problems at all.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
And like the food, the bathrooms, the, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we're set up. Yeah, we're all set up for that. We bring in a lot of porta potties, and we have bathrooms here, and there's a lot of places to eat around here. So it's all, the whole thing is totally orchestrated.
Yeah, plus the amount of
who funds all this stuff? I mean, a lot of your out of pocket stuff, or
yeah, out of pocket
donate something, or.
Well, basically, you know, if we do a big conference, they'll pay for the event. You know, they'll pay to come to the event. And then out of that, we, you know, pay for the speakers to get them here. We pay for their food, their hotel, everything. Sometimes we have them off-site and put them up in a hotel. Or, you know, we have plane fares, all of that, and food. Everything is covered with the speakers.
But when you have this regular folks coming up there with, you know, if there isn't any conference or anything going on.
Yeah. Well, basically, most people that come up here, we have a few rooms here, not very many, and people will just make a donation to stay in one of the rooms, or they camp. You know, most of the people just will come up. Some people camp. Some people just come up for 2 or 3 hours.
And you don't charge them for that? You just let them come in?
No, it's just a donation. You know, we have a little donation box out there. And, yeah. You know, but everything.
Oh, yeah, that's worth donating to. I mean, you have to pay if you want to go to the campground for the weekend, or you want to.
Yeah, you got to pay.
You got to pay. You know.
Yeah, I was telling.
I think it's cool that you're doing donation instead of like a fixed thing.
I told them they should pay by the ship, and then I'd be a rich man. Because we've had 100 ships one night. You know, it's not uncommon to see 30 ships come over that do something that make it very clear that they're not a satellite. And it's just a highway here. It's insane, the amount of ships. And, you know, some nights we'll have nothing. It's really weird, you know, and that makes me real clear they're not satellites, because one night we won't see anything at all. We'll be out there all night and we'll see maybe one or two, something really high in the sky, which is probably a satellite, and nothing. And then the next day we'll see 35 or something. So it makes no sense at all to say all these are satellites.
Now, when you are in contact with any of these beings, what sort of interaction have you had with them?
Just an amazing interaction. A lot of healing comes from it. A lot of knowledge and wisdom. They're always sharing information, you know, constantly. It's just an ongoing experience. You know, not for just myself, but others here too. We're just going through continuous evolution and in engaging that kind of energy. You have to rise to the occasion. So it's been really good. It's been a little challenging at times because stuff comes up and you've got to look at it and heal it. But overall, it's been extremely positive.
Now, would you say the main point of ESETI is personal growth and personal healing,
exactly,
that sort of thing, and anything else outside of that is part of the experience, but the main thing is personal growth?
Yeah, ESETI stands for Enlightened Contact with Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and we chose that for a reason. We tell people that come up here, you know, there's some people just want to come up and see a ship, and that's it. And we said, well, and after they see the ship, they go, well, who are they? You know, I want to connect with them. And then you say, well, in order to connect with these beings, you got to drop the baggage. You know, you got to get rid of all the old wounds and traumas and wrong conclusions from past experience and develop yourself spiritually, because these are extremely spiritually and technologically advanced beings. And so they do. And it's amazing how many people have had amazing healings and awakenings, you know, by just seeing a ship. And then that, as I said, cracks the egg, you know, for more to come.
Now, is there? I was wondering about Dr. Greer and his group. What do you think of them?
They've actually been here, and they did a training here, ambassador training, mm-hmm, here. Yeah, it was quite interesting. It was a much different program that we run here.
Okay, in what way? Oh, he's trying to be polite. Okay, James is trying very desperately to be polite.
it's just different. It's ours is all about personal experience and nothing about, you know, I don't really talk about myself at all. I just say, you know, I talk about the different groups, how to engage them. You know, things of that nature, and we just get a lot of activity, and it's just real important to. It's like mine isn't so structured. You know, it's not. We focus more on people just getting into the heart and having fun, and you know, lighting a campfire and having fun, and that's what attracts them. That's what brings them in.
Now that is cool. You know, you. Making a campfire, sitting around the campfire, enjoying yourself, having fun, you know, mm-hmm, listening to, doing some musical work.
Exactly. We have some spotters. You know, we'll have a couple spotters out there, three or four spotters watching, you know, in every direction. And, you know, we have night vision goggles and lasers and all the toys. And so we'll do a guided meditation to bring them in too. You know, things of that nature, and they come. I mean, they come in nice and low, and we get a lot of really good footage. But it's more an inner thing. When they do come, you feel them way before you see their ships.
Cool. Right on. I get that. So you also have, I just want to ask quickly, you also have creature sightings up there.
Oh, yeah.
Correct? Because you have, like, woods around you and...
Yeah.
And things like that. Could you talk a little bit about that? Maybe the variety of things that are seen as well?
Well, there's a lot of... here the veils between worlds are very thin because it is a vortex. And so there's a lot of nature kingdom stuff going on here. And the things that people think fictitious, you know, like elves and all that other stuff, you know, fairy stuff is happening. People are actually photographing them. I've had psychologists here sitting there, and a fairy came right up in her face and freaked her out. And she goes, I medicate people for these kind of things, you know. And so, you know, some very top people. But we also, we're in an area that's probably one of the most well-known Bigfoot hotspots. There's a lot of Bigfoot activity around here. And I won't mention where it is, but I know people that actually feed them, that put apples out for them and cucumbers, and they come and take them. And if you stop feeding them, they'll come and shake your cabin. And they'll let you know.
I'm hungry. Give me some apples.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, that, now everybody here knows about them, and you know, Native Americans know about them. They call them another nation. They say, you know, basically they say, don't go looking for Bigfoot. If Bigfoot wants to find you, he will. And you have to, you know, purify yourself and make yourself, you know, ready for the experience. And so they see it as more of a very spiritual thing.
I've heard, now just tell me your opinion on this. I've heard that the Bigfoot can basically read intention from distance. So definitely, if you're going in there with a sort of a selfish intent to see a Bigfoot and not maybe an open curiosity, they could avoid you with no problems whatsoever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people are really loud. You know, most humans are extremely loud when they're in the forest, and you can hear them coming a mile away. And these beings are very telepathic, very sensitive. They can sense your intent, you know, right from the get-go. And I'll tell you what I saw, which is interesting because this has been validated with several other witnesses. I saw a female 50 feet away, and she had breasts and everything, very clear, walked. She was actually moaning sitting on a log, moaning, letting out this terrible moan, like she was real distraught. And, you know, I got within 50 feet of her, and she stood up, and we just sat and stared at each other for about, you know, not very long, but just for a little while. And she knew I wasn't going anywhere. And then she just walked right across, right sideways to me into the forest.
And did you have any fear?
No, I was trying to help. I felt she was really upset about something. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know if she was injured or what was going on. And so I was just sending love to her and saying, can I help? Is there something I can do? And she just looked at me and nodded and kind of smiled a little bit, like a real small smile. And I could totally hear in my head, like, thanks, but no thanks. You know, like we don't trust humans, basically, is what I was getting. And which I don't blame them.
Yeah, I mean, why would you blame them? You know, really. You know, you pick up on the fact that humans would kill you at the, you know, drop of a hat.
Oh, yeah, so. Yeah. You know, so a lot of people ask me where this was, and I said, I'm not saying. I said, that's their territory. You know, people are going to go in there and just, you know, torment them and terrorize them. And they want to be left alone. You can tell they just want to be left alone and you know, do their thing in nature like all the other animals.
Yeah.
A little more advanced. Well,
yeah. I just wanted to mention just quickly, do you have any access to kelp, seaweed, dulse, alfalfa?
Yeah.
Those are natural. That's a natural form of iodine. So if you eat any kelp or seaweed or anything like that, if anybody in the West Coast is worried about radiation poisoning or anything like that, if they can get their hands on some dulse, some seaweed, some alfalfa, kelp, and eat that. You can even grind it up into powder and you can eat it that way.
I do that. I eat that anyway.
I eat it every day, yeah.
Yeah. You know, the one of the things about that, too, is that, as I said before, if people would spend a little time meditating and asking for help from these other beings, I know they could negate a lot of that. But, you know, what I'm seeing over and over is that we just are not learning our lessons. And if they come in and clean everything up again and again and again, you know, it's an endless babysitting job for them. And I just found out that I guess Obama just signed this bill to have all these nuclear reactors built, some of them by Tokyo. the exact same thing in Texas.
Really?
And I'm going, you know, okay, he just signed, okay, go out and drill again in the Gulf. You know, you didn't totally kill it. There's a few things left there. So, and now he's saying, okay, now we're going to bring the Tokyo reactors over here. You know, the exact same reactors. I don't know what it's going to take for the people to rise up and just say enough is enough. You know, how many people are going to have to die, you know, before they realize their leadership doesn't give a damn about them. All they care about is their pocketbook and the profit and the bottom line, you know.
Yeah. Do you think HAARP is involved in any way, shape, or form? I'll be talking to Nick Begich in a few weeks. I'll also be talking to Brian Leary. I'll be talking to Brian Leary tomorrow at 2 p.m.
Okay. There was even the Russians said they picked up a very strong signature of the ionosphere overheating above that area, which is a HAARP signature. And then they're trying to downplay it, saying, well, that was probably the energy released from the Earth before the earthquake. But basically, I think that was just trying to get out from under the obvious. But the cloud formations and the signature was there. So obviously HAARP was involved.
There's a lot of talk about natural events, like all of the natural things that are happening right now in the solar system and in the galaxy. And there's the man-made HAARP aspect and whatever technology that the toys that the big boys like to play with. Well, they're not actually big boys. I'm probably giving them too much for that by saying that. But you know what I'm saying. The underground stuff and the things they like to play
boys.
With.
Yeah, the wounded little boys and their toys.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's one or the other or if it's maybe event-driven things that are happening, events in the solar system that are happening that are being taken advantage of, perhaps with the solar flares and the modulation of the moon coming close, and these sorts of natural events that are affecting the planet, and maybe all you got to do is tweak it a little bit.
Exactly, that's what I feel happened. There was already an event unfolding there. And the place was ripe for that to happen, and you can go and hit specific areas, you know, with HAARP or something else, and actually trigger those events earlier or make them more severe or whatever. But it's definitely, you know, there is some things coming up here and information that we're getting. Have you looked into that that alien comet coming in?
Elenin, E-L-E-N-I-N. Funny that they would name it Elenin. E-L-E is extinction level event.
Uh-huh. And there's definitely a reason for that, because it's not Elenin, it's actually Nibiru. It's Nibiru that they've been looking for, and it's coming right in. And, you know, they're getting... Now, I've seen a lot of...
Well, there was also PN9, right? That just went by a couple of days ago. PN9 went by.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think this one is actually Nibiru coming in. But we got some inside information from the higher beings, and they told us that September, there's going to be a lot of things happening between now and September, a lot of events, because everything is being perturbed. You know, all the planets are shaking and rattling, and the Earth is just ringing like a bell right now. But they told
us that... Sort of like the moon when they dropped the capsule on it.
Yeah. And so they told us that that... this September, that there's going to be a major event happening. That's when this object is closest to the planet. And they were talking more about Nibiru. Now I find out this Elenin, it's closest to the planet in September. I think September 9th is what they said. I'm not sure the exact date. And that's when it'll have its major effect. So it's pretty interesting when you get the information from the higher beings, and it adds up to what the scientists are coming up with. And there's a couple scientists that are very clear, and they're saying this is not Elenin. That's just the name they gave it to cover up what it really is. And they're getting a lot of photographs in the southern hemisphere of these objects next to the sun. And, you know, some of these are sun flares. You can tell, okay, that's a
sun flare. Yeah.
Yeah, but other ones are very clear when you see them, is that they'll do the negative on them and things like that. And you can tell there's an object there.
Yeah. Well, not only that, there's the amount of objects, planet-sized objects around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of those showing them. That was a big thing back in, oh, I don't know, October, November, December last year, where all the objects were showing up around the sun. It was a big thing. They're still out there. There's people still posting images, but I think they pretty much SOHO behind and in front there have pretty much the LASCO images have been. They're cleaning those up pretty good now. I think they've got technology to hide all that stuff from us now. You're not seeing it was big and then it went away.
Yeah, they have ships the size of the Earth sitting there next to the moon, and we have photographs that we grabbed before they got rid of them. You go back there to that same time, and that those photographs aren't there. But these ships actually expanded their fields right when a big coronal mass ejection was let go towards the Earth and blocked it. And there's quite a few photographs of these just massive ships there that are interacting with the sun in different ways and actually blocking what some people would call kill shots that were coming towards the Earth.
Right. Yeah. I have no doubt. I mean, there's something going on there around the sun. The sun's been going a little weird for a long time now.
It's reacting.
Do you think that this is that the sun is plays a major role in this?
Oh, definitely. What's happening is there's a bigger picture going on. We have that galactic alignment, you know, with galactic core, or central, you know, Hunab-Ku, whatever you want to call it. And we're moving into a highly energized place in space that's creating a lot of these shifts. And the sun is actually reacting to that as well, throwing off a lot of coronal mass ejections and flares. And our magnetic fields are down right now. We're way down. So we're just getting streamed with cosmic energies. And actually, we're getting hit with about 500 blasts of energy a day. I think it's an hour. No, yeah, it's an hour. Used to be about 50. Now it's up to 500 that we're getting hit with big gamma ray bursts and other energies that are coming in. So, you know, we are on a ride, and there's a huge influx of energy coming in. And I think it's a combination of what the Mayan calendar was talking about. You know, we went through the ninth wave, March 9th, and look what happened right afterwards. And I went on record several places, and I told everybody, you know, after the ninth, all hell's going to break loose.
What happened after the ninth?
Japan.
There you go.
Yeah, and also the wave came in, and everybody I know felt it. They felt the energy come through. And I go, when that much energy comes through, the Earth is going to let loose somewhere, and you know, it's going to bust loose. And I warned people about Japan, too, and actually Khan, our friend over there, I told him about it. I said, you know, Khan, I said, Japan is just going to get hammered here in the future. I mean, I've had visions about it. And he said, well, yeah, I know. He goes, I've seen it too, but he goes, I'm there to help. And so he knew ahead of time that these events were going to happen. He didn't know exactly when and where, but he chose to stay there and to help the people there.
Right. He spends a lot of time in a cave, doesn't he? I mean, just meditating.
Yeah. Yeah, he does a lot of cave work and retreats, and he teaches a lot. He teaches classes over there, and you know, he's just a big lovable, you know, mountain of joy. He's incredible. You know, he has some incredible energy running through him and initiates people, and you know, he helps people heal, and just an amazing guy.
Yeah, he comes to the ranch and stays there, doesn't he? He gives classes.
Yeah, he loves the ranch because when he comes here, he's so wide open, he gets to see all the beings coming in and out. And so, I mean, what he sees compared to what other people see is just incredible. I mean, he's watching, you know, 12-foot-tall felines appear and you know, communicate.
Walk around.
Yeah, exactly. And all kinds of beings running around. And most people can't see them because, you know, they're not, their third eye isn't open. You know, they can't see the other planes and dimensions.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about the inner Earth type beings. What is the connection?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's basically what's happening on Mount Adams. There is a door to the inner Earth. And, you know, there's some crazy things being seen up there, and they're being seen by police officers and other people. They've actually had a pterodactyl, and we've seen it too. And I've kept quiet about it until about 10 more other people have seen it. And I let them give their descriptions of it. But it's that one bird, I can't remember the exact name of it, but it looks like a pterodactyl, but it's got a ball at the end of its tail. I can't remember the name of it, but there's actually a name for it. And it's one of those unpronounceable names. But it's been flying around here, and several people have seen it here at the ranch, and actually some police officers and people. One guy went off the road because it was standing in the road eating a dead animal. And he came around the corner and went off the road and crashed. And then a police officer came up behind him and saw it flying away. And he said, you know, I would have taken the guy in, you know, for being drunk if I didn't see it myself. Because he was totally blown away by it. But he said the guy couldn't even talk. And all he could say was pterodactyl. That was the only word he could say, mm-hmm. You know, so. So it's crazy stuff's going up here, but the ships are going in.
Which is way better than big freaking bird.
Yeah. But I mean,
where is this thing supposed to be then?
Well, it's right in the middle of the mountain, and we've actually filmed it, and we have the door opening and objects coming out of the door. We've got a lot of footage of that happening.
You
got
to put that footage up. That sounds amazing.
Oh yeah, yeah, we do. We have it. It's in the movie too. It's in the map maker's new movie. So, but what's weird about that door is I've been up there where that door opens. And when you go up there, there's just a big lava face there, and there's nothing there. There's no opening, nothing that you can see, or, you know, I've banged on the rock and everything, and it's pretty solid, you know? So it's one heck of a hologram or whatever else they do.
Pretty solid hologram we got going
and,
on.
And what type of beings or things are down
there? Are in the inner earth?
You know, there's a lot of different beings in there. Some of the ancient Atlanteans, Lemurians went under, and they're down there. There's some really short little guys down there I'll tell you one of my experiences. I went out of body, and I went into there, and I met with two huge beings. I mean, they were almost probably good 7+ feet tall, almost 8 feet tall, wearing brown robes. And, you know, they look kind of like very, you know, like masters, basically very powerful beings. And then they had a real small little guy between them standing there. And I looked down at the little guy and I go, what a cute little guy. And he sent a thought form at my head that gave me a headache. I couldn't believe how, you know, just said, I got very clear. He's the guy in charge, you know.
So he said, "Don't call me Yoda." Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, pretty much like you know, he just let me feel his energy.
And if you say the word Yoda, you're out of here.
Yeah, it was pretty humbling. It was very humbling, that experience. But there seems to be now. There's a lot of little people that the tribal police and other people see on a regular basis. They call them stick people, and they're always carrying bundles of sticks. And they see them, and they'll see them running across the road or walking around, and they can never. They start to walk up to them, and they just seem to vanish. And that's a pretty common thing, you know, up in the area up there. But there seems to be a lot of different beings, you know, down in there, some very advanced humans, you know, that look just like us, our ancestors, and some other beings as well.
You have a local, is it a reservation or is it just the local Indians?
Yeah, the Yakima Reservation is right there.
Okay. Now, you ever had any stories from the Yakima Reservation going up into the mountain or having any interaction? Have they told you? Do you know of any good stories?
Yeah, you know,
Doug told me to ask you, so.
Yeah. They have quite a few stories about them. One of them I liked was that they said that in the past that there used to be they would take those who got very sick or ill or actually broke a leg or an arm or whatever, they would take them up to a certain spot and they would take them in the mountain. And then they would receive a telepathic message to come back and pick them up. And they would come back and just in days, sometimes hours or whatever, you know, they would come back out and they'd be mended, you know, they would be well. And, you know, a lot of stories like that, they talk about one area. They said, don't go there. You know, don't go up there. That's the fairy lights. You know, they stay out of that area. Of course, I went up there.
You know? Yeah. Someone told you not to go there. Your obvious response was, go there.
Yeah. You greet them with love, you know, and respect. There's really no problem. But as long as you don't have fear, you know, you don't want to go up there fearful. But
Going up there with an AK-47 would be bad.
No, that would not do you very well at all. But you know, they know all about the areas up there and what's going on. And some they leave alone. They just won't go there.
Right. Has there been any interaction or conflict between the Indians and the American military forces in that area?
Yeah, there has. And they don't even like to talk about it, you know, but they've had some contacts with Palladian beings, and then they had some other guys, you know, the typical men in black, black helicopter stuff going on up there, and they had to tell them they had to get off the land, you know. But they don't even like talking about that. You know, you look at them, they go, they'll just look away from you, you know.
They'll go away. You talk to the Indians about that?
Yeah, they don't want to talk about it.
They
don't want to, you know. You know, to them, it's done. You know, it's like they did what they needed to do. It's done, and leave it at that. You know, it's like
they leave it at that. So you respect that.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you have coming up this summer?
Well, we're gonna do probably a couple conferences is what we're looking at. You know, we're having challenges right now. So we have some legal problems that we're dealing with because, you know, apparently it's illegal to have people gather on your ranch and do any kind of prayer or meditation or assembly or anything like that. So apparently the some of the local people don't have a constitution available, you know, and have come up with a lot of other rules and regulations. But anyway, we're having that all straightened out. So as soon as that gets straightened out, we're probably going to have a couple conferences.
Right. As soon as they blow through their made up rules and regulations on the spot. Right.
Yeah. And so basically, you know, you really think about, okay, you know, if, you know, I'm guilty of awakening and healing people. If that's a crime, then throw me in jail because I'm going to keep doing it no matter what. And educating people. So if they have a problem with that, then they need to really do some self-evaluation on that note. But you know,
are you not allowed to have people on your own property?
I don't think we're allowed to be on our own property according to them. You know, so
really?
It's unbelievable.
Wait a minute. If you want to have a party and have like 500 people in your place, you're not allowed to?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, what's happening here is that there's other churches here and they have barn dances, gatherings, you know, all kinds of fundraisers, everything, no problem. There's no problem whatsoever. You know, we do it and, we get like 30 or 40, tickets, you know, going up into $1,000+. So, it's unbelievable, and then we have to go to court, and then they hopefully throw most of them out because they're so ridiculous. I mean, even the stuff they ticket you for is things they know, you know, like permits and things like that. You already have the permits. They know you have the permits, but they ticket you anyways just to run you into court and tie up legal fees and things like that. So it's just insanity. It's a total lack of integrity. Insanity on their part, and basically they're in fear, and they want to stop anything unknown from happening, you know, that they don't understand, you know. So, you know, even the fact, you know, you have masters appear here, you have Mary appear here, you know, everybody else is totally in for it, you know. The rest of the universe is saying, yeah, you know, come on, let's hang out, you know, but these guys seem to think they're above all that.
But is it because of what, the religious rites that are afraid of something, or what's
that? I don't. You know what? It's just some real redneck mentality that if you're not one of them, you got to go. You know, it's that type of program. You know, if you're not.
Yeah, but I mean, you've been there for many, many years. So
25, right?
Yeah, we've been here 25 years with, you know, no accidents, nobody's gotten sick, no problems. The whole community loves us. That this place was like a ghost town, and now everybody's thriving. There's really no reason whatsoever that they can come up with that we are detrimental to anyone in any way whatsoever.
In actuality, you guys are beneficial because you bring so much money into the place.
Exactly, and everybody loves that, and you know, they did not get. We had a couple meetings, you know, council meetings, and not one person wrote a negative letter about us. You know, there was nothing in opposition, but other than the council themselves. So
the political council, right?
Yeah. So it's a matter of, you know, the same thing. You know, we have people in positions in leadership all over on every level that are running their program versus what the people want.
And yet, on the other hand, you have Intel people coming up to the ranch. You have engineers from Boeing. You have physicists. You have, God, all kinds of people coming up there having positive experiences. And, you know, then you have the bureaucratic end of things that are trying to throw wrenches. It's just a mixed up bag.
Oh, definitely. You know? It is.
The vast majority of people are having positive, wonderful experiences, even if it's just going out there and camping for a weekend and having fun with a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, basically, you know, it's like it's just insane because there's no harm, no foul, there's no health hazard, there's nothing going on here that's negative in any way whatsoever.
There's no cult of James?
No, that's a funny thing. Everybody talks about that I have some big cult or something like that. It's unbelievable. And the problem is that we don't have a membership. You know, there is no membership. There is no leader here. And that everybody that comes here are self-empowered people just coming to share and experience, you know, some of the tools and techniques we offer here. But there is no, we're very clear about that people need to have their own experience, make their own personal connection with spirit or whatever, and not be seeking outside themselves. And that's our focus here. So basically, you know, it's like there's times when I wish I did have a membership and did have a huge following that I could draw on those funds to do what I need here and to keep the powers that be away, you know, with all the lawyer fees and everything else. But I've just chosen to do it out of pocket just to keep that nonsense from escalating, you know.
Right. Tom, you know a little bit about out-of-pocket work for
yeah, a
couple of decades. Tommy used to do a lot of the MUFON meetings in Toronto out-of-pocket for, what, two decades? And all of his and his, you know, the people who were helping him out with the MUFON, it was all out-of-pocket. I mean, you know, there's only so long you could do that before you reach down and there's nothing left in the bottom.
yeah, exactly. And I think they know that, and that's why they're trying to generate all these legal fees, you know. So, but, you know, we are going to put a. Oh, go ahead.
You're not. It's not like you're running a church or anything up there.
No. It's not a. It's more of a science spirit, and, you know, it's world transformation is what we're into. And we just have teachers from all over the world, scientists, physicists, authors, yogis, lamas, you know, people come here from everywhere. And some people just put on, you know, we'll do some outdoor stuff, you know, where we're doing Yigong or Qigong or a ceremony, Native American ceremony or something like that. It's just very, just a lot of people getting together and having fun.
Yeah.
There you go, Tom. That's what you can do. You can go up there, take a bunch of people out in the woods and have them live off the woodland bounty yeah. for about 3 days and come back out fully trained.
There you go.
So long as you bring me some cooks over there, I'll be all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right, for all the stuff that they bring out of the forest to eat.
Yes.
It's funny because there are a couple of people living here right now that are chefs that are highest caliber, you know. So it is kind of nice having that.
That'd be good. That'd be good.
Mm-hmm. That's good if they're helping, if you get to sample.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah.
No, yeah.
We just have a small group here that's living here right now that we, you know, keep up after. It's a big ranch, you know. We've got yaks here and you know, livestock, a lot of things, and so we all just work together and you know, keep the ranch going and just have events now and then.
Yeah, it's great. I'm definitely.
Are you guys getting your own milk up there too? Or?
Yeah, we do. I know they're making everything illegal now, but you know, we have resources where we get. You know, the unpasteurized stuff.
Oh, that's
good. Well, yak milk.
There's a big fight down here by a gentleman that was selling raw milk.
Yeah.
It's been a giant fight.
And yeah, I hope he wins it.
Finally, yeah, he's won numerous times now, but, you know, they're still running him in court. But there's a lot of people backing him up right now.
Yeah. Great. Yeah,
they did a thing
happen.
Where they said he was trying to sell it, so he gave it away, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, basically you just got to find ways around it. But, you know, we've been living off raw milk for, you know, whatever, how many thousands of years. And
you know what's strange? Like, when, yeah, exactly, thousands of years. Like, when I was a kid, you know, up the street we had cows, and, you know, some folks that had cows, and, you know, we get our milk there every day. And, you know, yeah. We never had any problems with it. And
Yeah, I did too. I don't remember having any problems with the raw milk. And we drank it a lot as a kid. And then we had also, too, it's funny now that almonds, because, you know, almonds have the cure for cancer in it. So now they're saying all almonds have to be pasteurized in order before you can sell them, and which kills the elements that assist in the cure for cancer. So. You know, and then it's illegal for apricot seeds and anything that has these elements in them. It's basically illegal to cure yourself right now. If you...
To naturally
exactly.
cure yourself. Yes.
Yeah, it's or for any doctor to do it, too. It's just unbelievable, the powers that they've been given. And I think that's going to get turned around here pretty soon.
Yeah, with the pharmaceutical industry trying to take over... Pretty yeah. much everything. It's not a cure until it's gone through their process. If you want to naturally grow, I mean, with the genetically engineered foods, that's another whole subject, isn't it?
That is so crazy. You know that, you know, getting into the pharmaceutical thing, they've got these vaccines coming out that kill the emotional receptors in your brain, and you know they're going to end up turning everybody into zombies. And then you add the all the estrogen mimickers and everything else they're doing, the fluoride in the water and chlorine and 800 other pathogens in there that they're yeah. finding in city water. You look at that, and then you add aspartame to it and everything else. It's like they've created a wholesale assault on the body and want to turn us into these neutered zombies, and nobody's really going up against them, just a few people. Like David Horowitz, actually, he's on to all this stuff, and he's doing a great job of exposing that. But this last vaccine that they're coming out with, you know, if it's true what they're saying, we are, you know, people get that vaccine, they're all their emotional receptors are just going to be shut off, and they're just going to be nice little zombie worker bees, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the GMO foods, too, that's another story. That's just pure insanity. I mean, cows are dying and rats die when they did experiments eating the corn. You know,
oh, you just reminded me about all of the birds falling out of the sky and all yeah, of the fish that are dying and all of the – what else, Tom? You were covering this a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there was birds and fish and seals
yeah.
and
seals, yeah, cows dropping dead.
Yeah, like thousands of cows over there in Vietnam, and that area dropped dead. Now, that's pretty interesting. You know, when Tesla was playing around with some of his toys a long time ago, basically, especially the skater waves, when he was playing with those,
yeah,
that was one of the effects that they had, the side effects, and it kind of freaked him out. He didn't know that was going to happen, but a lot of birds just dropped dead out of the sky, and also fish, you know, all the fish in the surrounding areas just, you know, came belly up. And
the name of the show. There was a show where everybody blacked out for a few minutes, and then they came to again. And then, you know, of course, a whole bunch of people died because they were driving or flying planes or whatever. And in that show, they were working with a device that killed all the birds in an area. It was like a harp type of a deal.
Uh-huh.
And it killed one of the signs of where this device was there was a mass bird die-off. And then this was like 2 years ago, this show. And now we're having mass bird die-off. It's just a little weird. You know,
they kind of pre-program you so you don't, you know, freak out when it happens. Oh, I saw that on TV, so that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. It's no big deal. Yeah. We're going to have some people on the show that talk about Dave's Web, the guy from Dave's Web, will be on in next week, and he'll be talking about the movie industry and the music industry, how they sort of preload for events that are going to happen in the future. I don't know what that is. I'm trying to figure that out. Is it a preload or is it a sort of an event-driven, they got to tell you?
Yeah, it's they got to tell you, basically. You know, it's that old program they're running that they have to tell you first before they do it, and which is a pretty sick little game that they play. But you know, you can see it in everything. I mean, the 911, all that stuff was told ahead of time before it happened, and a lot of the
Simpsons,
I mean, it's all over the place. You can see the signs and the symbols and everything in all of it, but the. It's pretty messed up right now. What I see is there's just a huge shift going on, an energetic shift, and people are awakening, and these guys are losing their grip on it, and they're doing all they can to keep that grip, and they're going to do everything they can to create more terror and fear and everything to keep the frequencies down, but it's a mute point right now.
Do you think so? Do you think it's a mute point? You think that there's only so much they can do?
Well, basically, they're imploding energetically. Mm-hmm. They're imploding because what's happening is that as the frequencies rise and the whole Earth is shifting, she's moving into a new level, a higher frequency, and those who hold that concept of separation and fear and guilt and reckless greed and the tyranny program that they're running are of a very dense, unevolved frequency. Although they think they're really clever, they're not wise, and they aren't going to be making this shift. And they know it. They know their time is coming to a close and that their empires are going to collapse. They're not sustainable in any way whatsoever. So they're just, you know, they're grabbing all they can and cutting, running, and heading for the hills, basically.
Mm-hmm. But there's still the sort of energetic thing that's happening. And you said that the beings that you're in contact with, the off-Earth or multi-dimensional beings that you're in contact with, they have let you in on some things that are going to happen in the future. Could you, is like a list you could run down, or is it more amorphous than that?
Well, you know, they did talk about Japan before it happened, and that's been on record with quite a few people. I've talked to them about that, and that was one thing. I know Indonesia is far from over. You know, California, the New Madrid, all that stuff is going to start breaking loose. You know, they said basically everything is going to be increasing exponentially, and the Earth is adjusting herself to all these new energies, and she's going through a huge birthing process. And these plates are moving. They're going to move because it's part of the process is that our most ancient ancestors are being recycled as molten rock right now, because as the plates go back into the Earth, they go back and become molten rock again, and they're all moving. The only thing is now they're moving very fast, and they're going to go through a quickening, like everything's going to move real fast. So you're going to see just crazy weather like we're seeing right now. That's going to increase, extremely erratic weather and storms. You're going to see a lot of earthquake and volcanoes continue to happen, exponential increase there. And major social and economic stuff is, we're already seeing that right now, but it's really going to be hitting the fan here on out. Everything's going to come up to the surface. So it's just a matter of everything. Armageddon means, the great uncovering, where everything is uncovered so everybody can see it.
The unveiling,
Yeah, and that's what we're going through, this huge unveiling process. And, we're seeing the reckless greed at the highest levels that are running this country, and what they're doing and what they've set into motion. And unfortunately, a lot of other people, innocent people that weren't awake or paying attention or paying the price for it.
Totally. So you said September, you see a possibility of something. Do you have more details than that?
Yeah, it's an alignment coming up Elenin that's coming in, and basically it's not what they're saying it is. It's not a comet, it's a planet. It's big, and it's going to come zipping through, and it aligns with the other planets as it comes around. And when all the planets are in alignment, there's just a big capacitor effect, kind of like where it jumps boom 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 from one to the other. And I don't know if I use the right word as a capacitor, but going to be jumping, and it's going to affect the sun. It's going to affect the earth. It's going to affect all the planets as this thing moves through. And it's really perturbing the earth quite a bit. And we're going to go through not just a magnetic pole shift, but a physical one as well. It's already moving. The magnetic poles are moving very fast right now. They're really starting to take off. And eventually we're going to move into a physical pole shift as well.
You think a physical or a this is a debate that's out there on the alternative media community, whether it's a physical shift or a magnetic shift. Big difference between the two.
Well, basically, if you're living on the coast, it's a magnetic shift. If you're living up in the mountains, it's a pole shift. So that's what I've seen. The people in denial that are living right on the coast are not going to want to look at it being. But, hopefully it can be a slow one and not move, very fast. But I'm seeing a series of shifts and jolts and a lot of movement, a lot of water movement, just like before. And when I was in Santa Cruz, I used to live in Santa Cruz, California, it was about 25 years ago. And I told them about the earthquake coming, the big one that hit down there. And I saw the highway collapse and everything. And I went to the Unity churches and all the people down there, and I said, hey, you got to warn people this is coming. And I gave the exact date and time and everything, location of the event. And it hit right on time. And the first readings were 6.9. I think they raised it 7.1 or something later. But we hit it right on the button. And these are these higher beings telling us, warning us about it. And,
same thing happened in Japan. As they said, it was an 8.9, and I believe the estimates recently have gone up to 9.1.
Yeah, they always bump them up, it seems. But I think it's interesting that you have those visions. And I told people, I said, I'm getting out of the vision business, whatever you want to call it, because I got so much heat for that, and people angry and pissed, and hit them right at their survival level, and they got real upset about it. And I left right before it happened, before the event hit.
You got out of Dodge.
Yeah. And what's interesting is when I came back, those people are still angry at me. And they said, well, you created it because you talked about it. And I go, well, thanks for all the power. It's like,
But so you're like, you're James, you can cause earthquakes.
Yeah, I can wave my arm. And
for that before you invite James to dinner.
I just don't piss him off.
Don't piss him off, yeah. We actually got a close. Now we're running late.
We're running late, you guys.
Again.
Close up as usual.
as usual.
It's sad that people are taking that approach. And, you know, you're trying to help people and, you know, avoid any pain and suffering and loss, and they attack you. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. I agree with you. Well, James will be, you can go to his website. If you just give me a website, it's www.eceti.org. That's ECETI.org. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you're going to have a link there to the fund for the Japanese gentleman who's looking for his whole, did you say his whole family?
Yeah, he pretty much, so far he's lost his, you know, father, mother, brothers, everybody, you know. It's like, I don't know how many are in his family, but everybody's not accountable. You know, they can't find him. The whole village he lived in is gone.
Really? Where did he live? Do you remember? Oh. Or is it's been very close to that Sendai area?
Yeah, I think it's very near there. But I don't know exactly where he lived, but the whole area is gone. I mean, it's just off the face of the earth right now.
Yeah, that was amazing. The tsunami was, images are on the internet of the tsunami, and it's the devastation is unbelievable, really.
Oh, yeah. Really. Yeah.
And so if you'll have that link up there on the front page, right, you know, visible where everybody can see it, I'll also put it on your information on our website. It's an upcoming guest today. It'll be in past guests tomorrow. And also, you have a show on BBS Radio called As You Wish Radio. Am I correct?
Yeah, and that'll be on there. We'll have the link on there.
And that is, what nights do you, is your show?
8 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time. It's As You Wish Talk Radio.
On BBS Radio 1?
Yeah, Station 1.
On what night?
Saturday night, 8 o'clock p.m. PST. Okay.
And 10 o'clock EST.
Yeah, probably 10 o'clock.
All right.
Okay. So,
well, it's been a pleasure, James.
You too. Yeah, you have to come up and check it out yourself.
Sure. We will.
We will.
We're going to drag all the people from BBS Radio up to your ranch on one weekend. How would you like that?
That would be great. We'll just pull out the barbecues and go at it.
All right. Sounds good. Well, I'll see you guys next week when we'll have Dave McGowan from Dave's Web talking about the occult underlying influences in Hollywood and the music industry.
Bye-bye.
All right.
See you next week.